morning and a little bit of chuckles that we did have in the program, and we look forward to you being back next week. And very shortly, Dr. Kevin Walters just walked in the door, and he'll be having a chat with me on radio. Oh, there's nothing like a little bit of Alley Cat. And Dr. Kevin Walters, how are you? Welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be back. I'm actually, for those people new, I injured my knee and I finally got rid of the walking sticks today. So I'm feeling quite liberated, would probably be the right word.
It's a nice feeling, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, look, welcome back and thank you for coming back for our weekly catch up. And so it's been a busy week for everyone. So I've got one question that's come in. I have a few questions actually, but I'm not sure if you can.
Let's start with those because it probably will bring up things we need to talk about.
Okie dokie. One of them is, these came in last week a bit late for the chat, but and things have changed since this, but countries and communities across the globe are struggling to determine the best way to reopen their economies. And given we have no known case of the virus and controlled entry into Norfolk, can you outline from a medical standpoint what it would take to return Norfolk's economy to its pre-lockdown phase?
Okay. I can't answer that question for two reasons. One is that was written last week when we didn't think we had a case on the island.
Yes.
So everyone knows as of last week we did. So it's kind of difficult to answer that question because the situation changed. The other reason why I won't answer that question is it involves the emergency lockdown, and it's not my area of expertise. My expertise is medicine and give medical advice. Certainly there's lots of medical advice, and I certainly probably won't add my voice to the chorus. There's very clear medical advice from the chief medical officers of each state, and especially the Northern Territories. There's an excellent person up there. And that's because they know what it's like to work in external territory. So there's very good advice from Australia and internationally about what to do in different circumstances. And one only has to look at what New Zealand has done and what Australia has done. So I'll leave that to the authorities that are in charge of that. If anyone wants to ask me, I'm happy to offer that opinion. But certainly it's not my place to answer that on radio.
Fair enough, thank you. And the other one was, given that there is same-day testing available now and our only threat is going to come from overseas, what will be done to focus on these potential threats and allow us out of lockdown?
Okay, they're two totally different issues. I think I've spoken at length about testing here. There is different types of testing. They all have their advantages and disadvantages. And if you want me to bore you for 3 hours, I can certainly go on about that. certainly, I'll talk about that a little bit later. It won't be too long today, but certainly this is quite a hot topic about different modes of testing. We have been looking at this since testing first came out. And as far as I know, our superintendent has found a very good paper that summarises this. Again, people that know a lot more about this than us, there's two documents that I'm aware of, and I'll ask Michelle to put those on the NIRAC's website. One of them is a statement from New South Wales Health, the pathology department, precisely on that, talking about the different types of testing, where they're useful and when they may be useful and when they're dangerous. Like all medical practitioners, we look at the clinical situation and use the appropriate testing. And so, and sometimes that's quite difficult. So the experts have printed a two-page summary of what testing and when it's appropriate, and I'm pretty sure Michelle will have that available later this afternoon. If she doesn't, I'll tell her off. And the first document was something that was put out a few weeks ago, which was all the Association of Private Laboratories stating why antibody testing is extremely dangerous. And in the wrong hands, it can actually cause death and disease, so because if it's used inappropriately. So, and I know that some states in Australia have brought in $50,000 fines for antibody testings for any doctor. So, it's not as simple as one would expect. But like I said, if I answer that question last week, it's probably slightly different from this week.
Yes.
Because the evidence is becoming quite clear.
But we didn't actually talk about antibodies.
No. Yes, that is interesting.
In our chat on Saturday, I've listened to our chat twice here at radio through the panel and once at home, and not once in the chat did we mention antibodies.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. Again, I don't want to comment on what other organisations do with what I say, but certainly I would agree with that. I never once referred to antibodies, and unfortunately, because whatever organisation stated that I talked about antibodies and made a statement that I certainly didn't make, that it just started a whole lot of debate in the community. And my anxiety is that there's enough to worry about without people worrying themselves silly about one test versus another and then getting an opinion and thinking there's some conspiracy theories. I will outline what happened last week. So certainly that to quell a lot of the rumours that are going on. And we'll clarify those things.
No worries. And we got another question in on email this morning. And a very nice message there. Being Thursday, if the doctor from the hospital makes a statement today, can you please ask, will officials in future be open with residents on the status of COVID-19? It appears that existence was denied publicly by officials until recent days. Many, especially elderly, are now more concerned as to what is the truth and can we believe what we are told. Demtel is not good enough in these times.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I can't make any comment about other organisations, and I certainly have no ability to influence what other people write and what statements they make. The only thing I can assure the listeners here is that my job is to come on this radio. And you know, in New Zealand culture, when you come onto a place, you normally introduce yourself and outline what's going on. It's a very, it's a Maori culture and a lot of European culture. And I've probably been a bit remiss. I first was invited to come on this radio back when we had a measles outbreak in Samoa.
That's right.
And I came in because it is my duty as a doctor to inform the public in a public health situation of accurate information so that there is not undue panic. And that is my sole role. There is a tradition amongst doctors, and if you just bear with me for a couple of minutes, because I think this is lost, and certainly I've read some of the social media stuff, and as in my role, I cannot comment on social media. So even when I see something that is blatantly incorrect, I cannot correct it, even though I'd like to. There is a history of independence with doctors, going back centuries. And certainly we have resisted over the years, and sometimes it's affected our income. It would be very easy for us, for most doctors, to be an employee of a drug company or an employee of a vaccine company. There's enough paranoia about vaccines that we're in the pockets of the vaccine companies. I recommend vaccines because they work, not because I get paid anything. The reason why we have a pharmacist in town is because doctors have to be sure that when they prescribe something that they are not financially benefiting from whatever selection of medications that they prescribe. In some countries doctors do prescribe, and there's been lots of cases in Australia, of especially in men's clinics, of people prescribing a product that they have a high markup and it affects their pocket, rather than prescribing what is best for the patient.
Yes.
And at graduation we all take a Hippocratic oath. And we take that very seriously. There's not many professions that swear an oath of allegiance.
Yes.
You know, some of the armed forces do, and you know about that.
Yes, I do.
But so we have to be ethical throughout what we do. And just to clarify, just in case, because there was a lot of paranoia and conspiracy theories about the statements
shocking.
I make.
Yes.
Well, that's fine. I totally sympathise with the people. You know, one of the favourite things Michelle and I have said for many years, when there's a vacuum of information, it gets filled with rubbish. So what we have tried to do is give very clear and very straightforward advice. I am employed on this island as a totally independent practitioner. I am not employed by NIRACS. I work as a general practitioner. I'll clarify that. I work as a general practitioner. I see patients. and they claim a Medicare claim for me seeing them. We administer it on their behalf. A percentage of what I bill gets paid to NIRAX to provide an office and that sort of function, but I work totally independently. Now, obviously, we need to provide an after-hours service, so some of the doctors are contracted to provide an emergency, and we're paid. It's a very small percentage of our income. Most of our income comes from seeing patients, and that's a government thing. The reason why Michelle and I came here is because there's bulk billing on the island, because we strongly believe that people, no matter what race, age, religious, sexual orientation, and financial position, should get equal access to medical care.
Yes.
And so we love working in an environment where there's no financial barriers to getting good advice. And where you live shouldn't mean that you don't get good advice. We can carry on about this for ages. Yeah. But, yes, a small percentage of my income, I work for NIRAX, contract them to provide 24-hour emergency care. There are some contractual obligations with that, and mainly around quality, that I keep my education up. Michelle is contracted as a medical superintendent. She's not the boss of the hospital at all. NIRAX is a team effort. Every single person up at that site has a very good attitude and important role.
Yes.
In infection control, our cleaners are the most important people.
Exactly.
And so everyone is up there. Michelle's job is to provide clinical advice to the management. I don't tell a manager what to do. That's their area of expertise. The managers don't tell us how to treat people. But there is vast mutual respect, and it's a fantastic team. The management at the hospital are wonderful.
Yes.
And we give good support to them, and they support us.
The community is very blessed to have the whole team there. We are, and like I said, I've had a lot of comments about these radio chats. It started way back when Karen Innes-Walker used to come in, and I look forward to Karen coming back. And then I continue to ask you to come in because I know the community. I'm here with them. I know what people are concerned about. And I know COVID was new for everyone. So I know that I asked you to come in here. It was after measles and everything else because of your expertise in that field. There's a lot of experts on the island, I think, but you are the one that's qualified and certified.
Well, we're at the coalface at the moment, so that's partly where it comes from. But that independence is actually incredibly important. Mm. And the reason why I come on the radio is we're GPs. We believe in holistic care.
Yes.
So I don't just treat an individual. When I treat an individual, I also treat their partner. I treat their family, and most people who have had some involvements with their families know that we always involve, in New Zealand we talk about whānau, you know, we always treat at the patient level, at the family level, at the relationship level, and at the community level.
Yes.
That's why I don't hesitate if I'm asked to go and talk. It's part of my job. Don't get paid for it, to go and talk to the school. The school wants some advice. I'd rather they hear it from me.
Yes.
And when I give that advice, it's unfettered. It is not politically influenced. The great thing about my job is I have to tell the truth all the time. Yes. It's awkward sometimes. And the great thing is, Michelle was saying this yesterday, is that we've had our whole career, we've had to tell the truth. And telling someone they have cancer or something is the truth, and it's unpleasant, but we do it every week.
Yes.
So I'm not averse to telling the truth. It doesn't bother me. And actually, I'm legally and morally obliged, and I swore an oath to that, to not lie.
Yes.
And so that's the way I've operated for the last 35 years. So when I'm faced with something like COVID, it's work as usual. It involves a slightly large number of people. It involves the world. But on an individual basis, it's quite simple. And I have a moral and legal obligation to come on the radio and give accurate information.
And I really appreciate it. And in fact, I look forward to it every week. And obviously, as do people, you see the emails here. And so thank you for that. And
we better get back to the question. So what was the question again? It was about what the announcement last week. So let's make this clear. We for many weeks or a couple of months, we've been getting on the radio and saying, we think COVID is on the island. We can't prove it. We're doing testing. But what we implored everyone is to behave as if it was on the island. That was based on New Zealand Vice. The wonderful Prime Minister Jacinda said,
I admire her.
Yes, she said that treat everyone you meet as if they have COVID, which is really good advice. And certainly the New Zealand experience has been adopted a lot by Norfolk Island, mixed in with Australia's advice. So, so we knew the day was coming when we were going to make an announcement. So I can tell you, it was me that first saw that result. I came into work on Friday morning, opened my computer, and there was this result sitting here saying positive. I took a deep breath. And the good thing is we discussed the scenario multiple times, and we had a very clear, structured, organised plan. So as soon as I saw that bit of advice, we knew we had to ring the patient immediately because the patient is the first person to need to know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I grabbed Michelle as the superintendent, and I said to her, we had a brief discussion for 5 minutes to make sure that we had a clear message on what we were doing. She thought it was best if she spoke to the patient directly, even though I was involved with the patient, and the result came to me. So she got onto the phone while I went on and did other things. After extensive discussion with the patient, we then spent the rest of the day organising contact tracing, lots of phone calls to Public Health in Australia, and enacted the plan. The appropriate people in the community, I think bar one, and that wasn't our fault, was notified of that. So they were notified as per the plan.
Mm.
And it was clearly sent out. And at the end of workday on Friday, we decided we were going to announce that to the public, because we just needed to do our due diligence and see, now, are we announcing that a case is out there and everyone's at risk, and do we need to think about lockdown, what else is going on? Or are we happy that it has been contained? And certainly by 5 o'clock that night, through a lot of hard work behind the scenes from a lot of people, we were happy to say that this did not pose a threat to the island.
Mm.
So emails were sent out regarding that to everyone who needed to know. The next morning, Michelle and I came into work. We drafted a press release together. She signed it off. That was distributed again to people who needed to know. And I got permission to come on the radio and discuss it. And we got on the radio and discussed it.
Yes,
and
we
that
did.
That is it.
Yes.
There was no, to my knowledge, there was no knowledge of that blood test until it came into my inbox that morning. I know because I checked the night before. And certainly as soon as we had that information, it was relayed to the appropriate people.
Mm.
So I've seen also things like we knew about it for weeks and we kept it away. I mean, the most ridiculous thing I heard was, well, if we'd known it was positive and in the community, we would have taken it a bit more seriously, which... anyway, I won't comment on that.
No, but I mean, I can go back. Every day you've come in, you've said
it could be
when we get a case.
Yes, absolutely.
Everyone, you've said when. We don't have a positive now, but when we do, you know, so, and I remember the day clearly when you said that someone had travelled in from a high-risk country who had been, and that person where they were had contracted or come into contact with COVID. So I remember that clearly.
And
so it's nothing, it's not a secret.
No, everyone here knows everything I know.
Mm-hmm.
There is no secrets. There's no conspiracy.
No.
What other people do with that information, what people get wound up, discuss different types of tests. The other thing was the timing. Some people said that the timing of the test was directly after there was a reduction in our level 4 to level 3. I can't comment on that. We have tests. We take tests every single day.
Mm.
We've had two or 300 people come onto the island. We've swabbed a lot of people. And we have tests back every single day.
Yes,
it was coincidence. Now, some people say that was a convenient... it is what it is. Shoot me. That's what happened. And if people don't believe it, then that's their problem, to be honest.
You know what? out of the community here, one case. I say congratulations to everyone. That was only one case. You know, it could have been a hell of a lot more if things were different.
Yep.
You know, so that's what I've said to you lots of times when we've chatted, and also other government departments. If it's on the island, if no one was doing anything, who would get the blame? And I've said that openly here on radio. You know, who will they blame if it did get here, if nothing was being done? So I think everyone has worked together as a terrific team, all departments, all levels, including radio. I mean, we started off with the cyclone and then we're straight into COVID. And I think everyone's coped and dealt with it really well. And we just need to get on. And I liked what Michelle said in her release: stop finger pointing, be kind to one another.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important. It's.
I would have thought.
I use the word vindicates, and I think people thought I was justifying or feeling guilty about it. I repeat it again, because this is a common myth. Everyone thinks that the reason lockdown occurred was because people were breaking isolation, and so the rest of us were to be punished. It was the exact opposite. What we were worried about is that we had people wandering around the community who we thought might have had contact, and we were protecting the rest of the community from them. The reason the lockdown went on for 2 weeks was because that's how long it takes it to show up. The reason I said we were vindicated is that it did get in on the island.
Yes.
I can't comment any more than that, because I don't want to identify the individual. And that's why I'm disappointed that other people put words in my mouth, because that's not what I said.
Yeah, exactly.
Demtail's bad enough, but seeing it on official sites is not very good.
And I have to say again, I played the interviews back and not once did we mention the word antibodies.
No.
Not once.
No.
So I'm kind of disappointed at that as well, given I was driving the panel for our chat. Yeah. But anyway, it's great that you've come back, and I look forward to you coming back again next week.
Now, I like to tell stories. Have we got time for a story?
We've always got time for a story from you, Dr. Okay. Kevin.
I think the important thing, I was thinking about this over the last week, and this is where I have my little proud Kiwi moment.
Good on
from
you.
The country. Everyone knows that the All Blacks are the best team in the world. So it's a brave person saying that in Australia. Anyway, I worked in New South Wales for a while, and people may remember that the Blues lost for about 7 or 8 years. I think it was 8 years in a row, and they were quite desperate at the end of their losing streak. And so the coach and the captain went over to New Zealand to talk to Richie McCaw, who was the All Black captain at that stage, because they wanted to find out about leadership, because, you know, a big reason why the All Blacks are successful is they work as a team. And since we were talking about teams, I often think of this, and I often quote this example about what leadership and what teamwork is about. And certainly, the All Blacks were having a training session, and this was quoted in an interesting article in a paper talking about leadership. And the Blues captain and the Blues coach went up Richie McCaw and they asked him about leadership, and he stood there for a while and gave some very interesting anecdotes about leadership. But they wanted to ask some more questions. He says, "No, excuse me, I have to go." And they said, "You know, what's the rush? Why do you have to rush? You've just finished your training. You know, the other guys are getting ready." He says, "Because I have to go and sweep out the changing room." And they said, "I beg your pardon?" He says, "One of the privileges of being the All Black captain is that they give you the brush, the broom, and you get to sweep out the changing room." And he walked off. And, you know, we all know what God's NRL rugby league players are. And I think what I love about that story, it's a story about humility. It's about transparency. And great leadership is not about losing sight of what you're trying to achieve. And no matter what level of leadership that you get, that you should be humble and stick to your knitting. So I just hope that through this crisis, that we get some leadership. And that's why I'm here on the radio. But I'm going to go back tomorrow. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to see my patients, and I'm going to try and improve the health of this community one by one with the patients I see, but take some time out to inform and correct some of the information that is. And so I'm going off to sweep the locker room.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure talking to you. And honestly, a lot of people appreciate you and all that you do. And we haven't finished with COVID. I'll have some more questions next week, I know. And I look forward to your return. Have a great day. Thank you very much.
I'll hobble off. Okay.
You hobble off. Thank you very much.